You know, it feels like it's been forever, you know, since I hit record on this. I don't know. It's for everybody. I've had a lot of people reach out to me, you know, ask me when the next episode's going to be in. I do appreciate it. I forget sometimes that people listen to this. You know, I always say I had a good friend who, when I started running these, basically said to me, "When you stop enjoying it, stop doing it." And I haven't stopped enjoying it yet. It's realistically, so for anybody who is paying attention and is listening and wants to know what happened, why there's been a little bit of a drop off here, a couple of reasons. When I started doing this, I was working from home. Obviously, COVID had just started, and when you're working from home, all you really have to do is, you know, sign off for the day, open up your laptop, hit record, you know, and there's not really a whole lot more to it. But that's no longer the case for me. I moved to a different town. I went back into the office. I basically talk professionally now, and so it's sometimes tough to come home and just rip an episode. But, you know, we've had such an insanely crazy NBA season. I know a lot of eyes are turned to college basketball right now, so I think the focus will be on the NBA probably after the Final Four finishes up next week here. I'm recording this on the 26th of March, so I don't know how long it's going to take me to finish it, but that's when I started, you know. So we'll see the NBA kind of go to the forefront after this college season's over, and anybody who is paying attention to it is going to pay much more attention to it after we get that kind of in full scale. I was listening to the Book of Basketball 2.0 podcast. Bill Simmons is doing a phenomenal job on that. I know a lot of people don't really fuck with Simmons, but I personally like him a lot. I think he has a lot of good takes. I think that he might dive a little bit too far into a lot of different things, and it's crazy for one person to have like takes that on the amount of stuff that he does, you know. So that for me feels a little bit wild, but other than that, I think his NBA takes are spot on. He doesn't hide the fact that he's a homer, which I appreciate. Some people are blatant homers and don't want people to know it, so they try to pull this aura of professionalism and talk about their team in like a sidesteppy way, but he's just like, "I'm a Celtics guy through and through. That's who I know, that's what I know, and I'm gonna keep it going like that," you know what I mean? But he's doing, well, it's not really him, it's Jackie McMullen, and she's doing this great series on the Icons Club, the NBA Icons Club, all of the great players of yesteryear who give their tutelage to the new guys, you know, who come in after them and teach them. It's kind of like a fraternity of sorts, you know. And the last one that she just did, the episode I had just finished, was Magic and Bird, and it really brings me back. And I think it's been a while since I've done a historical episode, and since we're kind of nearing the end of the season, I know that, you know, Mark and I have a better dynamic when we're going back and forth on the regular season. And when I do these by myself, I do like to talk about the history because I fucking like it better. I don't know, whatever, screw you, I don't care. But you know, there's there the latest episode was on the Magic and Bird rivalry, which I was thinking about it today. I was cleaning my apartment, and I'm listening to this podcast, and I'm thinking to myself, has there ever been an individual player rivalry that has superseded the Magic versus Bird? I encourage you, and I challenge anybody who's listening to this to think of one single case of an individual rivalry that supersedes that. I don't think there is one. Because you have to think about the way that basketball is comparative to other sports, right? You can think of Peyton versus Tom Brady, but they're not actually playing against each other. They're not on the field at the same time. They're not, you know, playing at the same time. So yeah, you could make that case there, but if you're looking at head to head, Magic defends Bird, Bird defends Magic. They're on the court at the same time, playing against the same defenders and the same people on their team. And I think that there's a major aspect to that really led to the NBA being able to utilize it as the cash cow that it was. And I think a lot of people who undersell this rivalry, which there's few of them, obviously at this point, we all know Magic versus Bird and the Lakers versus the Celtics. And what people don't tend to really know or realize when they're looking at this is just how important this rivalry was to the league that we see today. I mean, to the league, period. Without this rivalry, who knows if Jordan would have gotten to the point that he got to. I mean, Jordan was the bridge from the old NBA to the current NBA. Jordan brought us from the rivalry years between those two guys to Kobe, Shaq, to the Spurs. I mean, the NBA being a global powerhouse that it is today. And before, so I want you to get an understanding, put yourself in the position of somebody in the 70s and get an understanding of what the NBA was going through in this time frame. I mean, we had massive issues with cocaine. It was basically an epidemic throughout the entire sports world, but definitely in the NBA. We're seeing players leaving to go to the much more fun, much more flashy, and for lack of a better way to put it, much more black-friendly ABA, three-point shots, multicolored balls, all-star games with dunk contests. It was more fun. You know, and they had the probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest player on the planet at the time, in Julius Erving, who was the most exciting person to watch. And all of a sudden, we're thinking to ourselves, yes, the ABA is not a product that's going to be televised, but it's definitely a product that players are going to be attracted to, and it's definitely a product that's going to bring fans out. And it's definitely a product that's going to compete against the NBA in such a stance that it actually became a problem for the league. And so the merger, of course, happens. But I think even going further back, I want to continue to touch on this, because the most major what if in NBA history happened as a result of the ABA, right? We go back to 1969. The most sought after prospect in NBA history and basketball history to this day is coming off of his third national championship with John Wooden at UCLA. He's a 7'2". I mean, he's listed as 7'2". Back then, they used to basically lie about their height. They would say that they're shorter. So I would assume he's probably closer to 7'4". He might have shrunk down to that by now. He's about 75. So, you know, maybe he's that height now, but definitely back then, I would say he was around 7'4" in that range, with the most unstoppable shot of all time as a direct result of basically just racist rules being implemented in the NCAA of not being able to dunk because of this man. Coming to college was the most sought after recruit probably in history at that point. And now he is being recruited not by, I mean, because you have to think about it. Most guys, when they come out of college, are not getting really recruited, maybe by an agent, maybe by an agent to come out of college early, but definitely not by the league, because it's like, where else are you going to go? But at this time, we saw this budding, fledgling league called the American Basketball Association, and they had a really cool team right in New York called the Nets. And Lew Alcindor, being from New York, is drafted by both the New York Nets and the Milwaukee Bucks of the NBA. And when we look at it from this perspective, you have to consider like both sides. One is the established league, one is the new league. But one is the team in his city with his family there, and one is the team in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And Kareem, or Lou at the time, he had a real choice. He had a real choice. Where do you go? Do you go to this cool up-and-coming league, the ABA, or do you go to the established veteran league in the NBA? And so he sat down with both teams. And the interesting thing happened is that the NBA kind of shot itself in the foot. The general manager at that time of the New York Nets was one George Mikan, who you all might know as being the goggled-faced original big man in the NBA in the 40s and the 50s. And he sits down with George Mikan, who gives him an absolute lowball offer. He passes it across the table. He says, this is what we're going to offer you. And Kareem says, I know I'm worth more than this. Brings it back to his manager at the time. I think it might have been his dad. And they talk about it. They talk it over. They go back to the table. They say, this is what we want. And they bring back their counteroffer. And Mikan is absolutely unwavered. He doesn't even move his offer. And so they lowballed him into signing with the Bucks because the Bucks are like, yeah, fuck it. We'll pay you that. I don't give a shit. We got the money. The problem with the ABA is that they could never get the funding. You know, that's why they really folded. You know, these teams just couldn't get people backing them up to properly pay the players. And I think that if you look at any kind of league that competes with the main leagues, I think that's usually the case, right? They just can't get enough backers in order to have the kind of money that's needed in the general environment to pull the kind of talent that's necessary to actually compete with the main one, you know. And so that's what we ran into then too. And so he signs with the Bucks, and the rest is history. Now the 70s still had their problems, the ones that I was talking about before. They still had their issues. I mean, think about the NBA as the mainstay that it is today, right? It is an absolute powerhouse league. Even if people say they don't watch it, that's fine. There's so many people who do worldwide that it doesn't even really matter. But back then, the game was so unpopular that the finals, the games to determine the champion of the NBA were tape delayed. If anybody knows doesn't know what that is, back in those days, they would tape the game, delay it so they could play a better, I guess the best way to put it, a better primetime pull for the crowd, and then play the game the next day on TV. So it was already happened, you know. And so for people who were trying to pay attention, you really had to basically either listen to the radio or you had to just read the newspaper in the morning to find out what happened or go to the game because it just wasn't popular enough. And this is, you know, throughout the 70s you had the Dave Cowens and the late Havlicek's of the Celtics. You had the Bill Walton year in Portland. You had the Sonics had a couple good seasons. You had the Bullets had a couple good seasons. The New York Knicks won their last of I think, two championships in 1972, so a full 50 years ago at this point. But the league is in dire straits. I mean, we have the new commissioner, David Stern. But overall, the policies implemented are not ideal for the players. You know, there's no revenue sharing. Not yet. It's coming soon. There's very little free agency options. So the players really don't have a lot of autonomy over their own contracts. They don't get paid the way that they should because, honestly, you can sell at an arena, but if you don't have the TV rights, you don't have the money coming in. There's no TV people don't want to watch this, you know, and that's really where the money is, right? So enter the college basketball game. It is so monumentally more popular than the NBA at this point and McMullen actually points this out on the Book of Basketball. I encourage anybody to listen to it. It's actually a really good episode. And, you know, she points this out. She says that they didn't let their announcers mention the NBA in their broadcast because it was beneath them to do so. College basketball was a juggernaut in basketball when it came to actual money in basketball. And the NBA was just its little brother, basically, at that point. And so there's these two stars. There's this white boy from French Lick, Indiana, and Larry Bird. And then there's this flashy black kid, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, from East Lansing, Michigan, who's at Michigan State in East Lansing, Michigan. And these two players are going head-to-head. Of course, if you know history, you know that Magic took that game, and Larry played pretty poorly in that game, and they were both going to the NBA. And we knew, even at that point, that this might be the beginning of a pretty staunch rivalry. And I think the other aspect of it, it's been noted pretty well over the years that, quite frankly, it was a black versus white a lot of times. You know, Boston is notorious for being one of the most racist cities in America, and back then it was really, really bad. If you know the story of Bill Russell, you know that he is not in good terms with the city of Boston. Like, he won't go back there. You know, he got his house broken into when he was there. They smeared feces all over his home, right? They would scream derisive remarks at him in his home stands. It was a horrible place to be black in the 60s. And when he left for good, you know, because, I mean, he was a champion for black people. Bill Russell, without guys like him and Muhammad Ali and Kareem and all of these guys who really stood for African-American rights, like, if it wasn't for those guys, we wouldn't be where we were today. And so for him to get treated the way he did in a team, in a city to which he brought 11 championships, 11 championships he brings to Boston, and that's how they repay the favor, you know. It's obscene, it's unheard of, and it's ridiculous, and that's what he had to go through. And so that is the state of that city. And so now when you think about the city of Boston and they think about their stars, they don't look at Bill Russell as they should. They look at Larry Bird. You know, he was the epicenter of the city of Boston at that time. Now, did it have a lot to do with the fact that he was white? I mean, if you ask people back then, it did. It really did, you know, and he played his ass off. I mean, the guy couldn't be stopped. I remember being a kid, and I was born in 94, so I was born after Bird was done. I never got to, of course, watch him live. And watching his highlights, because I was like, okay, I know this guy shoots threes. I know that from, like, NBA Live and using the classic players from the 80s. So I know he shoots threes, but he can't really dunk. You know, he can't really slash and, you know, and get up and under guys and stuff. So how the fuck does he score? Like, how does – you can't shoot all threes all day. You know, so I would watch his highlight reels, and you just see how immaculate this man's footwork was and how – amazing and exemplary, the way he got his shots off, the utilization of the mid-range game, the ability to basically scare defenders into having to take a step off of him because of how phenomenal his passing was, and because of that, just getting enough space to get that shot off. And if you know Larry Bird's shot, it goes up all the way over his head. He's the full 6 feet, 9 inch frame of his, going all the way over his head. It was a nearly unblockable jump shot. And so if he was feeling it, there's just not really a lot you can do about it. You know, if his muscle memory was working in a specific game, like, there is not really too much. I mean, I encourage anybody who's listening to this to go to YouTube and look up Larry Bird's 60-point game versus Atlanta and just see the way that he is able to move with the ball and see the way he gets the ball out of his hands. And the things that he's capable of doing. You know, I think a wildly underrated defender. It's not that it was spoken that he was a bad one. It's just that we don't really talk about it. I think he was definitely able to guard 2 to 4. And I think he was able to do so in a very, very legitimate way. He's not going to block your shot, but he can definitely get a steal and he can stop you from getting a good shot off. And now it's him versus the Showtime Lakers and Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson, to this day, considered probably the greatest point guard of all time. I mean, his records have all been superseded. John Stockton did so with both assists and also steals. I don't think he was a steals king, but definitely with assists. And, you know, of course, you have to pay attention to the fact that John Stockton played for 20 years and was almost never heard, and Magic played for, I want to say, 13. And what he was able to accomplish in that time frame and the ability for him to succeed in that small window, you know, comparative to what a lot of other stars of the day were able to do. And so, you know, he was flash. He was fun. He was smiles. He was energy. He was high fives, hand, you know, shaking hands, you know, grabbing shoulders, giving guys hugs. The story always goes, and if you guys are watching Winning Time on HBO Max, it's another good insight into Magic, the way he was as a person, where it was nothing but constant positive energy for Magic Johnson. A fierce, fierce competitor, but nothing but positive energy. And I think another key component to this rivalry was a brand new commissioner in the form of David Stern. David Stern, who, you know, as much as we fucking hated him sometimes for the way that he, you know, looked at the players, the way that, or not really looked at them, but the way that he domineered in his decision making, the marketing between these two guys was absolutely out of this world, because they didn't have to do anything else. They didn't have to say Lakers versus Celtics. They didn't have to say Kareem and Worthy and Magic and Michael Cooper versus, you know, versus Bird and Parrish and McHale and Dennis Johnson and Bill Walton. They didn't have to say that, because we knew those guys were going to be there too. But it was Magic versus Bird, and these two guys were so heated in their rivalries. I mean, it was quite interesting to hear about their stories, because I was always of the impression that they were friends off the court, but they really weren't. Not at first, at least. Like, they didn't like each other, and it had a lot to do with Bird just being kind of a dickhead. Like, Larry Bird, he was such a hard worker, and you have to consider the fact that a lot of these guys, you know, they come from a crop of just being able to jump higher than you, run faster than you, and they use that to hone and perfect their craft. And Bird didn't have that. Bird was just hard motherfucking work. That's all he had. You know, the hick from French Lick, he's just a good old Midwest small town kid who learned the game from the ground up and utilized it to the best of his abilities, and brought a little team in Indiana State to the Natty in college, and now he's in Boston, you know. And there was so many aspects and key components to it, and it was such a beautiful concept, because there was so much. It was such a perfect storm of a rivalry where it starts off, Magic wins a championship almost right away, and then Bird wins one, and then Magic wins two, and then they play against each other, and Bird, of course, takes the first one, Magic takes the second, and so it really was this back and forth. If you were going to put a ledger, a balance sheet on paper between the two of them, I would say Magic probably got the upper hand. He had more MVPs. He had five championships to Bird's three. I think he probably, in terms of basketball lore, would go down a little bit more, a higher of a regard. But I think that also had to do with the back issues with Larry at the end of it. I mean, if you're getting back surgery in your 30s, you're going to be in a bad position. And if you're getting back surgery in your 30s and it's 87, 88, you're definitely going to be in a bad situation. I think that really is what did it for Larry. And so we didn't get all of the years out of those two as I think would have been necessary. But when I talk about Jordan bridging the gap between the old NBA and the new NBA, if you're looking at that little window between the 70s, where, again, I mean, the league was going to fold. They didn't have the money to sustain. They weren't getting paid on their TV deals sufficiently for them to really make a splash in the lexicon of American history, and especially in sports history. I mean, they were dominated by almost every other league. It was baseball, and then the NFL, and then maybe even hockey, because they had the Canadian market. And then you go about 12 rungs down the ladder, and now you have the NBA, this little tiny league that no one really gives a shit about, you know. And so when you go from that, and now you have this little bridge, this little ledge that looks like there's a little bit of hope here for the horizon because of this rivalry, and now all of a sudden we have this ascendance, Jordan. I mean, I think I know I've made this point before, but the transcendence athletically of Michael Jordan, I forgot about it. You know, I know about him at the end of his career with the killer mid-range game, the turnaround game, the ability to up and under. But if you're looking at the Doug Collins years, my fucking God, that guy got off the ground. When I'm watching the NBA today, there's a couple points of the current league that I think are important to bring up. Number one, Ja Morant's going to be the next face of this league. I know Luka's there. I understand that. You know, our last episode was really kind of shitting on Luka. But my biggest gripe on Luka is not his talent. It's never been his talent. I know how good he is. It's his attitude. He's a pouty baby. I cannot get on board with Luka Doncic's behavior. I've never been able to deal with it. You know, it's this concept of this kid is the pride of Slovenia. You know, and I know there was probably a time when he was very young where he had to work really hard to make himself known. But when you're that young and you're already playing on Real Madrid B team, you know, the under 18 type of team, and you're already putting numbers up and you're already the greatest player that's ever come from your country, and you're already this and already that, and you're already a blue chipper, and we know that you're going to be a top five pick, and we know that you're going to be in the NBA and you're going to do a good job. Like, at that point, don't you kind of stop listening to any naysayers? Like, don't you kind of get to a point where you don't work as hard as the next guy because you know how good you are? He has the instincts of a hockey player playing basketball. He knows exactly where to be on the court. And Luka, of course, is very comparable to Larry in the way that he plays. You know, they're both dual forwards in that regard. They both pass the ball like point guards, but they play the game like small forwards. And so because of that, on both regards as well, they're definitely not athletic. They're definitely not as quick and agile as other guys, and they definitely had to work to get to the place where they are. The problem I have with Luka is that when he doesn't get his way, it's just a pout, man. And it's normal in the NBA. I understand that. It's not just him. But I think that there's an aspect for some of these guys to kind of earn stripes first. Like, don't you feel like James Harden wasn't like this when he was in Oklahoma City? I mean, think about his first 4 years before he got to Houston. We all knew what James Harden was. We all knew that he was going to be too good to be a sixth man for the rest of his career. But he was damn willing to do it. I mean, he was notoriously willing to be a sixth man on that team. He would have taken a good payday and come off the bench for Scott Brooks for the rest of his career. I mean, he made it pretty clear. But it was just they weren't willing to pay him the money to be a sixth man. And so, like, there wasn't enough value in that. And that's where the disconnect was. But he didn't turn into the, you know, the gripey, pouty, whatever, until he got to Houston. And then he started averaging 25 a game and 30 a game and all that garbage. You know, and it was funny. Tyronn Lue's been talking a lot of he was talking shit about Joel and Harden getting to the line a lot. And Maury was on record. He tweeted back at Tyronn Lue's comment. It was a reporter, you know, reported the comment. But he tweeted back at the comment, and he was like, "Repeat after me: free throws are a result of defenders not being able to stop you." And he's right. He's right. Even though it's not made field goals, if you're going to the line 25 times in a game, they couldn't stop you well enough to not have to hack. Even if you are putting your hands up and faking the jump shots, all that kind of stuff. Like, it is an art form in its own right. It's not fun to watch. No one said it was going to be. I have a lot of guys at my job who were really, really hard on this Harden trade, and I'm like, dude, this is so fucking perfect for Embiid. Now, they're having their ups and downs together. And I think there's going to be growing pains. There's two guys who are so ball dominant and so used to being the alpha, Harden less so in the last few years just because of his role in Brooklyn, but definitely Joel. It's always going to be Joel's team, and I think Harden's falling into that role relatively well. I mean, we'll see how long it lasts, but the biggest thing for me is that they don't play an entertaining style of basketball, and that was obvious, but from the time the trade happened, they're not an entertaining style of basketball. James Harden has never been fun to watch. Embiid has been, for sure. But I dare anybody to tweet at either myself or Mark or the podcast itself and give me a time when James Harden was ever, 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 ever fun to watch. We marvel at his talent. We marvel at the numbers. He's phenomenal at the game of basketball, but he is not fun to watch. It is between the legs, dribble, 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 drive, step back, fake, hands up. Let me throw my hands into your hands, get called up for a foul. Do a little pirouette move and go to the line and knock him down. I mean, that's the game. That's his game. That's been his game for 9 years, 8 years. I mean, why are we so surprised anymore? Why are people hating on him? Like, this is what's gotten him to 20,000 career points, is doing this for years and years. He's a master at this. But at the end of the day, I mean, that's going to be their game. If they want to win, that's what they're going to do. But they're not who I wanted to talk about. The reason why the NBA is in good hands right now, I haven't seen this kind of young talent in a very, very long time. I mean, you look at the new wave of guys, we know what the next generation is going to look like. You know, it's going to go LaMelo, Edwards, Trae Young, Luka. I mean, you can make a case for DeAndre Ayton's getting some MVP looks this year. He's top 10, quite possibly going to be a second team all NBA, you know, because they're doing the thing where they're putting Jokic and Embiid on the first team together. So second team's going to have some guys there. I don't know if he'll make it. I'm sure that they'll come up with another name like Gobert, something of that nature. But if you think about it, like, who really goes ahead of him? If that's the case where they're both on the first team, who really goes ahead of DeAndre Ayton in the second? Can you make a genuine case for anybody? Cat? Definitely. Definitely Cat. But, you know, there's going to be a question here: how good is this kid going to be? And it's funny now that we look at it. Back in the 2018 draft, everybody was about to jump on this bust train. DeAndre Ayton's a bust. Fuck no, he never was going to be a bust. We knew what he was. He was so safe of a pick. I mean, Trae Young's not a safe pick. Sorry, Rashad. Like, you know, he's not a safe pick. When there is a low floor with Trae Young, there just is. We didn't know what he was going to be, but right now he's leading the league in both points and assists. Insane. Insane. The kid is a star, an absolute superstar. But the name that I think that you guys know where I'm going towards, I don't even know, I might have already said his name, but the absolute prowess, the athletic ability and giftedness, the magnetism, the entertainment value of Ja Morant. I mean, I was looking online, and I posted this on my Twitter yesterday. I was looking online, and Ja Morant's Memphis Grizzlies, their road attendance at their road games has been 94.5%. So when they are out of town and not playing in Memphis, now the Memphis is about 85, which doesn't seem good, but look at the years preceding. I mean, they couldn't crack 60. Nobody was going to Grizzlies games, even with Ja there in the past. Nobody cared. It's not a pull. You know, that's their only sport, their only team there. They still don't care. Ja Morant's ascension into this pedestal of stardom where he is today, it is drawing crowds. People are going to watch him play, period. End of sentence. They're going to watch their team get washed by the Grizzlies. And they're going to watch Ja Morant. I mean, he put up the 53 spot, and I think that was impressive in its own right. But the thing that impressed me much more than that, completely worlds more than that, is that he shot and made four free throws. That's it. Everything else was a field goal. Are you kidding? That's absolutely out of this world. I've never heard this. You know, this is not something that just happens. This is not a normal occurrence. Athleticism like this comes every so often. If we see it, you know, we see guys like there's different forms of athleticism that comes along, right? There's the in-game dunker types. In-game dunkers like Blake, where early Lob City, you know, if you had league pass, you just had it on and you didn't leave your seat until Blake was either on the bench or there was a timeout, because you didn't want to miss what he was about to fucking do. The shit that he did to people, the baptisms that he was responsible for, you know, I mean, he could have washed a town with the amount of baptisms he was throwing out there. You had to watch him. You know, it was must-see TV. Steph in 2015, 2016. Must-see TV. Transcendent what he was capable of doing. You didn't know what he was going to do. You had to watch him. If he was in town, you had to get a ticket. You had to get a ticket early. It wasn't going to be a cheap ticket. You were probably going to be in the nosebleeds. It was probably all you're going to find. And you're going to be happy with it because you got to watch Steph Curry play. And folks, when I tell you that that is currently what is happening with John Morant, if anybody has watched him even for one game, for one quarter, one half, you know exactly why that is. If we take in-game dunking like Blake, if we take transcendent talent like Steph, and then we take the other aspects of athleticism that we're not accustomed to in a game, why did I bring this up from Jordan? Well, folks, and you know, call me taboo, call me blasphemous. Have you really seen someone with the capability of getting off of the ground for everyday plays like blocks, layups, jump shots? Like John Morant has been doing since Jordan. Maybe prom Kobe? Maybe D-Wade? Maybe. His lift right now has to be at least 45 inches. I mean, I can't say that you can make a case for anything under 40. He's a pogo stick. If he was an NBA, in 2K, he's got the pogo stick badge. He's off, up and off the ground multiple times. I mean, I was sold on the growth aspect during the block in LA. And you all know which block I'm talking about. It's literally my banner on Twitter right now. The man goes up with two hands off of a layup, grabs the ball with two hands off of the backboard as a block, and brings it down and controls it. Ever seen that before? Well, I had. I've seen it once before. And it was when Ja did that shit in college. You know, he's been doing this for a while. This isn't new territory for him, but I think it's new territory for a lot of us because we haven't seen anybody else do this before. You know, he is bringing to this game a new aspect of what we haven't seen before and a level of athleticism that we haven't seen in probably about 35, 40 years since Jordan. You know, I it really reminds me a lot of what I saw in those early Doug Collins years of Jordan. Just him getting off of the ground, his ability to get around defenders, his control on the dribble, his speed, his change of pace. I was talking to somebody at my job on Friday, talking about some prospects coming into the draft. Jaden Ivey probably being the number one that I was talking about, potentially the number one pick overall in this draft. And the reason why he is an NBA prospect, and it might not always work in college, the issue with college a lot of times, and we saw this with Trey at Oklahoma, is that these NBA-style players, their mindset is just above their teammates. It's just above them. They see the game faster. They play the game faster. They're capable of doing things quicker. And sometimes that's a detriment in college. But to a scout, it's music to their ears. It's absolute visual gold. But for a guy like Kennedy Chandler or Jaden Ivey, or even to the extent, Jabari Smith, like these guys, what they're showing us is the ability to change speeds. Some guys are better than it than others. If you're going to be a 6'4 point guard, you're going to be better than it than a 6'9 power forward. Just how it goes. But that is what Ja has. The first step is the best I've seen since probably Derrick Rose. A lot of people compared him to Russell in OKC, but I think that's completely different. The style is completely different. He's just much more in control. There's a lot more finesse. You know, Russell was angry. He was attacking. You know, he was barreling into you. He was taking enough. He was getting just far out of your way so it wouldn't be a charge every time. But everything else was just shoulders down like a bull. But if you remember D-Rose, for anybody who does, I mean, there was a sense of finesse to his explosion. You know, when he gets to the basket, the up and unders, the changing in midair, the contact, adjustments to contact. I mean, it's funny because And, you know, so many people are talking shit about Zion right now. Just, guys, just wait till the fuck he gets back, dude. Like, we're all talking shit about him like he's a bust already. Like, he didn't average 27 points a game last year when he was playing. Yeah, he's going to get hurt. He's a kid. He's a kid who's way too big for his body, for the explosion and the athleticism. He's just too big. He'll figure it out, guys. Like, it's not Greg Oden. It's not Greg Oden, okay? Repeat it after me. It's not Greg Oden. Greg Oden was immediately going to be a bust. We all knew it from the time that we heard about the health reports coming out after the draft. We knew they shouldn't have taken him. We knew Kevin Durant was better. This is not the same thing. Now, that being said, Rashad was 100% right in saying that the 2019 draft, and by the way, he said this like two weeks after the draft. The 2019 draft is the Ja Morant draft. In my opinion, he was the safer pick. Zion was the more obvious one, but there were the size was always a glaring weakness in its own right. We were in awe about how big this kid was. Wow, he's 19, but he's 280 pounds. We were in awe about that, but that's not necessarily a good thing, right? It's not a good thing. It's not that it's a bad thing. It's just, what happens if the knees can't handle that? Because he's also exploding off of the ground. What happens if he gets hurt once and his body can't recover? What happens if he can't lose that weight? Because we know he's going to have to at some point. What happens if he loses his speed and has to rely too much on his strength and he loses his balance? What happens then? Right? So those are questions we had. I don't know what the question was about Ja. There just wasn't really a question here. We just knew what he was, you know, and so that's why it's safer. But the upside of Zion to this day still, I think, is probably a little bit higher. We just have to see him for who he is. But the reason why I bring it up is because the adjustment in midair for both of those guys is like elite. They might have the two best versions of that kind of shot of anybody in the league right now. And they're from the same draft class, you know. But yeah, the reality is, we have to. If you're looking at the landscape of this league the way it is, and the build on the league, and the appeal of the league, and the entertainment factor of the league. I mean, think about how it is now again, and now go all the way back to the first thing I was talking about, and compare it to what it was back then. Yeah, you know, well, think about how amazing that is. The time that we get to live in, right? I mean, you had to really be an NBA fan in the 70s. You basically had to be an NBA fan in the early 80s too. You know, the 90s is really when it started, because that's when it gets international. That's when Air Jordan starts to come out and the NBA starts to be cool. Fab Five, you know, longer shorts, black socks. NBA's cool, you know. And now it's been like that for so long that we don't know anything else. It's part of the culture. I mean, if I'm going to do another Game Changers episode, I think it's got to really be about Allen Iverson. To be frank with you, yeah, I'll wrap this episode up now. I don't know how much longer you guys want to listen to me drone on about random shit. But that's really what it is, right? Allen Iverson is probably the biggest game changer since that we've seen. If you're looking at the actual changing of the game, it's Steph Curry for sure. But if you're looking at the way that the NBA is portrayed and considered, and the people in it, and the cultural icons in the NBA right now, that doesn't happen without Allen Iverson. That doesn't happen without everybody on my modified basketball team getting an arm sleeve. Not a neoprene sleeve to shoot, like the neoprene sleeve definitely, but we didn't get it to help with our form. We got it because Allen Iverson had it. And then that was the first accessory, and then all of a sudden we're all doing the right leg sleeve like T-Mac, you know, and the headbands, like all of them. But AI started that too. I mean, who wore a headband before Allen Iverson? He was an absolute cultural revolution. And he made the NBA something to seek. something as a status symbol, not just a sports goal. And that, I mean, that's what was new for it. There was a lot of guys who tried to bring that to the league. I mean, Shaq was cool. Shaq was just too nice. You know, Shaq's like, he's mean on the court, but he's just kind of nice. AI is from like the ghetto, dude. He's from Newport News. AI is from like a hard life, a hard area. And like, we knew what he was about. We knew what he was about. Like, he scares the shit out of me. Not now. He's just like a bubbly old guy now. He's kind of like a little fat now. You know, he's just kind of hanging out. But like back in the day, it's also funny seeing AI at like the NBA 75 and all that shit, because he's still wearing like the semi-askew hat with the do-rag and like the really baggy shit and like the ankle length jorts and shit like that. Like it's still in 2003. It's like, man, oh man, like, I know that you were cool at that point, dude, but don't you want to still be kind of cool? Like, that's not it anymore, dude. Like, the next thing that happens is, like, AI gets a TikTok, and he just, like, turns into another cultural fucking icon, right? Anyway, I think I'm gonna touch on that, you know, down the line here, but like I was saying, guys, I'm going to get Mark back on this. We're going to keep running it the way we used to. We're going to figure it out. You know, if I can't get someone on, I'm just going to do it like this. This shit's fine. Sorry if you need banter. I'm banter. That's me. I'm Bruce Banter. You know, it's, but either way, I appreciate you guys so much. And I look forward to continuing this, and I'm still having fun, and I hope you guys are too.